outcomes always with the need to go to governor's offices, to go to state departments of health and force these questions about access. So I think we're actually in a better spot than we would have been without COVID. I think the CDC today needs to come up with, and I know they're working on it, guidelines for detention settings specific to them, but they need to be much more explicit. So these intake pens where you cram people together, where you're going to have transmission, they need to say explicitly, you shouldn't do this. You shouldn't be putting 40 people into a small pen, having them sleep on the floor. They should also be explicit about things they avoided talking about before, like copay should be eliminated. People who have symptoms don't report them, either because they have to pay money when they report these symptoms, especially in prisons, or they may go to a punitive setting. They may go to a solitary confinement, essentially. And so the CDC can be much more explicit. To do this, though, their guidelines have to be much more rooted in the actual experience of incarcerated people. So they need to talk to incarcerated people. When they go to a tour, just like a state DOH, they can't walk in and take a manicured tour from jail administrators. They need to sit down and have confidential discussions with people who are living this experience.
How many prisons and jails in this country?
We have 3,000 jails, about 2,000 prisons, and another 2,000 juvenile detention and immigration centers. So about 7,000 of these boxes. So if you think we have 5,000 cases in this country today, that number can dramatically increase.
We have to leave it there. And I want to thank you, Dr. Homer Venters, for being with us, the former chief medical officer for New York City's Correctional Health Services. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
On 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Every single person since SB8 has been a law has needed to travel out of state. Every single person that's reached our line.
We've been clinging on to Roe versus Wade and the protection that it offered. And it feels as though that protection is being taken away from us. So it feels as though this is a moment of survival. And I think any moments of survival can be very scary.
What did abortion access look like in America when Roe was the law of the land? Tune into KBOO's Roe on the Rocks, a limited series podcast where I investigate this question as I take you through the months leading up to the U.S. Supreme Court decision that effectively overturned Roe. That's Roe on the Rocks, airing Thursdays at 9 a.m. You don't want to miss it.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Medicare for All advocates plan to rally in Portland this weekend. Biden administration invests heavily in new COVID vaccines for the fall. And in international news, the North Korean leader threatens U.S. and South Korea with nuclear weapons. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, July 29th, 2022. I'm Josh Salem. Triple-digit heat was being investigated yesterday as the cause of death for four Oregonians, and the forecast shows no signs of letting up soon. The Oregon State Medical Examiner's Office said at least three people have died from suspected hyperthermia during the heat wave in Multnomah County. A fourth death is suspected due to heat and was reported in Umatilla County. Oregon and the Pacific Northwest have reported extremely high heat since Monday. Temperatures at or near triple digits are forecast into the weekend. The duration of the heat wave makes it likely Portland will at least tie its longest streak of six consecutive days of 95 degrees or higher. Climate change appears to be fueling these longer heat waves in the Pacific Northwest, a region where week-long heat spells were formerly rare. The nonprofit Climate Central rates the heat wave a 2 on their climate shift scale, meaning climate change has made this type of weather 2 times more likely. Heat-related 911 calls in Portland have tripled over the last several days. More than 4 times more people than expected have been visiting emergency departments for heat-related symptoms. People working or exercising outside, along with older Oregonians, were among those taken to emergency departments. Temperatures reached 120 degrees inside at least one food cart this week. Multnomah County said its 4 emergency overnight cooling shelters were at half capacity on Tuesday, but officials decided to expand capacity to accommodate nearly 3 times more people. Cooling shelters will remain open until at least Saturday morning. Residents in the Northwest have been trying to adjust to longer, hotter heat waves following last summer's deadly heat dome, which led to record temperatures and deaths. About 800 people died in Oregon, Washington, and British Columbia during that heat wave, which hit in late June and early July. The temperature at the time soared to an all-time high of 116 degrees Fahrenheit in Portland. Other regions of the U.S. frequently experience temperatures of 100 degrees, but people in the Pacific Northwest may not be as acclimated to the heat and are more susceptible to it. Officials in Seattle and Portland on Tuesday issued air quality advisories expected to last through Saturday, warning that smog may reach levels that could be unhealthy for sensitive groups. Groups in Portland will rally this weekend for Medicare for All, starting Saturday at noon at the South Park Blocks. KBOO's Grant Button has more on the rally this weekend.
Medicare for All PDX is hosting a family-friendly rally on the 57th anniversary of Medicare's birthday, July 30th, as a call to action for a national Medicare for All health plan. I spoke with Travis Nelson, the House District 44 Oregon State Representative and Labor Representative for Nurses. You're speaking at an event on July 30th, a Medicare for All rally in Portland. What will the rally be like and what can people expect?
Yeah, I'm going to attend the rally as a speaker. I think people can expect a good time and educational experience. It's going to be a lot of folks who support single-payer healthcare and celebrating the anniversary of Medicare. I believe Medicare was signed on July 30th in 1965, and it's one of the most popular government programs in history.
And just for a broader sense, what is Medicare for All and how does it differ from the Medicare and healthcare we have today?
Well, right now, if you're a private citizen, in all likelihood, you depend on your job for health insurance. The Medicare for All movement is fundamentally a movement in which we believe we need a system that separates employment from healthcare, and we believe the government should be the driving force behind those healthcare plans. Essentially, a Medicare system that would be provided to each and every single citizen and not just those who are senior citizens.
How would Medicare change our response to COVID or other serious health issues?
I believe that if we had single-payer health care in the United States of America, that our response to COVID would have been much better than what it was. If people wouldn't have feared the cost of hospital bills and doctor bills, I think a lot of people would have sought care sooner. And I think we could have prevented a lot of deaths had people not been afraid of medical bills and seen healthcare providers much earlier in their illnesses.
How has your experience of being a nurse affected your opinion about Medicare?
Well, as a nurse, I believe in Medicare. It's not perfect, but, seniors love it. It is popular. As a nurse, one of the things I hated most was when somebody would come into the hospital or the emergency room with a serious illness and actually want to leave because they were afraid of the hospital bill. I'm a big believer that no one should ever die because they can't afford to pay. And I think a single-payer healthcare system like Medicare that was available to every single citizen would decrease a lot of unnecessary deaths in this country.
has your experience of being a political leader and legislator affected your opinion about Medicare?
I'm more firm in my belief than ever that we have got to have a single-payer healthcare system in the United States. I hope that we can do it in Oregon. We've got ballot measure 111 that will be on the ballot this November, which will ask Oregonians to state that they believe that healthcare is a human right. We also have a task force on universal healthcare that's doing work right now that will have a report in the not too distant future. So I'm more firm in my belief than ever that we've got to do something here in Oregon if we can get the federal waivers and get this done. And nationally, we've got to get to a point to where we have a system in which no one dies because they can't afford to pay for their health care. Your health care should not be tied to your employment. I'd encourage folks to Google ballot measure 111. It's going to be on the ballot this November. I'm encouraging folks to vote yes. I would encourage folks to look for more information about the task force on universal health care that's currently doing work. Healthcare for All Oregon is a great organization that has, I believe, has resources about both the ballot measure and the task force. Ballot measure 111, it simply asks Oregonians to state their belief that healthcare should be a human right. There's no costs attached to this ballot measure. It's simply asking Oregonians to state their beliefs. And I want a country and a state where we've got citizens who are well and aren't afraid to go to the doctor.
For KBOO News, I'm Grant Bunn.
Eastern states want to get more energy from offshore wind, but some worry it may adversely affect local communities. Edwin J. Vieira has more on the story.
As part of New York State's climate goals, Governor Kathy Hochul has announced the third competitive solicitation of offshore wind projects, with the hope of powering 1.5 million homes. This comes after Hochul committed $500 million to offshore wind development earlier this year. The state's goal is to develop 9,000 megawatts of offshore wind by 2035. However, it isn't without cost to local communities, says John Polimeni, an economics professor at Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences.
With any new initiative, it is expensive to develop the ports. If your port is not currently prepared for wind energy, you need to do some changes to the port to make it accessible and proper for wind energy.
Polimeni, who's also a Schenectady City Councilman, says the short-term costs are small compared to the longer-term benefits that come from reducing dependence on fossil fuels. One of many planned offshore wind farms in New York will be up and running in 2024, generating power for the town of East Hampton. In nearby New Jersey, one of the largest wind farms in the U.S. is being built. Known as Ocean Wind, it is slated to produce 1,100 megawatts of electricity when it's operational in late 2024, enough to power 500,000 homes. Karen Fitzpatrick, an Atlantic County commissioner, says she is ready to bring New Jersey one step closer to its goal of having 7,500 megawatts of offshore wind power by 2035.
We'll be able to impact the environment in such a positive way, but also impact the electric grid and keep it strong. We already have the infrastructure close to the shore. We just, in extreme layman's terms, just need to plug in.
Pushback to the project stemmed predominantly from concerns over the location of the wind turbines. Beachfront residents were worried about obstructing their ocean view, while bird lovers were concerned about their effects on migratory birds in the Atlantic Flyway. However, the turbines will be 15 miles offshore. That's 8 miles farther than birds migrate, and about 5 times farther than the human eye can see. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection.
AARP Oregon offers age-friendly community grants. Eric Tegetoff has more.
Projects that make communities more age-friendly in Oregon are getting support from the state's AARP organization. After 6 projects were chosen by AARP in June to receive grants in Oregon, AARP Oregon chose 4 more from that original pool of applicants as part of its age-friendly community grants. Eileen Glatt is superintendent of senior services with the Ashland Parks and Recreation Commission. Their project to build out a venue, including wheelchair access and benches, near the Ashland Senior Center is one of the grant recipients.
Then we'll be able to hold classes out there like line dance and tai chi and yoga, and it will be more accessible for some of the outdoor entertainment events that we do.
The Ashland Project is receiving $6,250. The AARP Oregon grants fund projects that aim to make transportation and public spaces more accessible, as well as promote diversity, inclusion, and civic engagement. The state's four grants total nearly $15,000. Glatt says this is a small but meaningful project, and that it was inspired from the conditions the pandemic created.
Especially during COVID, we realized we needed more opportunities for outdoor activities, to have a place where social connections can still thrive even when pandemic conditions prevent indoor gathering.
Other grant recipients are the City of Philomath, which is adding benches in its city park, Grow Portland, which is rebuilding a garden in the city, and the Main Street Garden and Enterprise, which will expand its offerings to the local food bank in Wallowa County. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Faculty at colleges and universities saw their salaries drop a record 5% this academic year. A new report shows that when adjusting for inflation, that's the biggest decrease in decades. KBOO's Eric Leuschner has more on the story.
College faculty across the country saw the biggest decrease in their wages in nearly half a century, according to an annual report. The American Association of University Professors finds average pay for full-time faculty increased 2% in the fall of 2021 compared with 2020. However, when inflation is factored in, real wages actually decreased 5%. Glenn Colby, who compiled the research, says it's the biggest decrease since his organization began collecting the data in 1972.
It's not just the wallet that hurts. Actually, working conditions have been a problem as well. And ultimately, we worry about the morale of faculty who have, for the last couple of years, been in constant crisis mode, putting out one fire after another.
Colby says numbers were similar to the national average for the University of Washington and Washington State University. He says the only fortunate news to come from the data is that layoffs in the wake of the pandemic seem to have slowed. The report doesn't include information from community and technical colleges in Washington State, although they account for nearly half of the state's instructional staff and enrolled students. Colby says these institutions often lack the staff to compile this data. He also notes that community and technical colleges often rely on adjunct professors who have been even more likely to see their hours cut in the pandemic.
It just adds an air of uncertainty to the profession and makes it more difficult for the colleges to attract and retain the talent that we want in the classrooms.
Colby says one step faculty can take is bargaining to improve working conditions, especially contracts that last longer than 1 year.
Or even better, negotiate for the opportunity to get tenure at some point.
For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Eric Leuschner.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear with a low of 69. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly sunny with a high of 101. Today in history, in 1958, President Dwight Eisenhower signed the National Aeronautics and Space Act, establishing the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, or NASA. The quote of the day is from President Eisenhower, who said, "This world of ours must avoid becoming a community of dreadful fear and hate, and be instead a proud confederation of mutual trust and respect." North Korean leader Kim Jong-un said he is ready to use nuclear weapons in potential military conflicts with the United States and South Korea in a speech yesterday marking the 69th anniversary of the deal that ended fighting in the 1950 to 1953 Korean War. He added, "Rivals are pushing the Korean Peninsula to the brink of war." Kim said, quote, "Our armed forces are completely prepared to respond to any crisis, and our country's nuclear war deterrent is also ready to mobilize its absolute power dutifully, exactly, and swiftly, in accordance with its mission," end quote. Kim also accused the United States of demonizing North Korea to justify its own hostile policies. He said the U.S. has a double standard because it conducts military drills while branding North Korea's routine military testing as provocations or threats. Kim also said South Korea is led by gangsters. The South Korean Yoon government has moved to strengthen Seoul's military alliance with the United States and has allegedly wanted to bolster its preemptive military strike capabilities. Kim has increasingly threatened North Korean rivals with an advancing nuclear program in what some foreign experts say is an attempt to obtain outside concessions and bolster greater domestic unity. In April, Kim said North Korea could preemptively use nuclear weapons if threatened. Kim's military has also test-launched nuclear-capable missiles that place both the U.S. mainland and South Korea within striking distance. Kim is apparently seeking greater public support as his country's economy has been hard hit by pandemic-related border shutdowns and U.S.-led sanctions. North Korea has rejected U.S. and South Korean offers to resume talks, saying those countries must first abandon hostile policies towards North Korea, an apparent reference to those U.S.-led sanctions in U.S.-South Korean military drills. U.S.-led diplomacy, aimed at convincing North Korea to give up its nuclear program in return for economic and political benefits, appears to have stalled. The Biden administration announced it has reached an agreement with Moderna to buy 66 million doses of the company's next generation of COVID-19 vaccine. That vaccine targets a highly transmissible so-called stealth variant of Omicron, and the supply should be enough for all who want the upgraded booster. Last month, the federal government announced it had secured 105 million doses of a similar vaccine from rival drug maker Pfizer. Both orders are scheduled for delivery in the fall and winter, assuming various regulators sign off on their effectiveness. Omicron has been dominant in the U.S. since December. BA.5 has caused a new wave of infections nationwide, including the president. Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra said, quote, "We must stay vigilant in our fight against COVID-19 and continue to expand Americans' access to the best vaccines and treatments. As we look to the fall and winter, we're doing just that, ensuring Americans have the tools they need to stay safe and help keep our nation moving forward," end quote. The U.S. orders with Pfizer and Moderna include options to purchase 300 million doses each, but getting to that total will require more funding from Congress. About 261 million Americans have received at least one COVID-19 shot, but only 108 million have received the booster. The Moderna contract is worth about $1.74 billion. A Baltimore family is suing a Sesame Street-themed amusement park for $25 million because of claims of racial discrimination. They allege multiple costumed characters ignored a 5-year-old black girl during a meet-and-greet event last month. The suit, which seeks class action status, was filed in a federal court in Philadelphia against SeaWorld Parks, the owner of Sesame Place, for, quote, "pervasive and appalling race discrimination," end quote. The lawsuit specifically claims four employees dressed as Sesame Street characters ignored Quentin Burns, his daughter Kennedy Burns, and other black guests on June 18th. The lawsuit says, quote, "SeaWorld's performers readily engaged with numerous similarly situated white customers," end quote. The lawsuit comes in the wake of a video, widely distributed on social media, that appears to show two other black girls being snubbed by a costumed employee during a parade at the park outside Philadelphia. Sesame Place already apologized in a statement and promised more training for its employees after the video went viral earlier this month. During a press conference Wednesday, one of the family's attorneys, Malcolm Ruff, called for transparency from SeaWorld and for the company to compensate the Burns family. The suit was filed in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania. Biden pushes Congress to pass the Inflation Reduction Act, and Secretary Yellen says the U.S. isn't in a recession. With more on these stories, it's Nadia Ramlagan with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Look, this bill is far from perfect. It's a compromise. But it's often how progress is made. by compromises.
President Joe Biden from the White House Thursday pleading for Congress to pass the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. In addition to inflation, the bill also addresses climate change, taxes, and health care. Biden said it's no surprise that the economy is slowing, but the country is on the right path. Shortly after a new government report showed the economy shrank for the second straight quarter, reviving fears of a recession and criticism from Republicans on the president's economic policies. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen staunchly maintained the U.S. is not in a recession.
Most economists and most Americans have a similar definition of recession: substantial job losses and mass layoffs. That is not what we're seeing right now.
In the Senate, South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham and Connecticut Democrat Richard Blumenthal introduced a resolution that would designate Russia as a state sponsor of terrorism. Here's Graham.
And the sooner we make that statement, the more likely other countries will jump on board to punish Putin.
Massachusetts Democrat Ed Markey introduced a Senate bill reinstating net neutrality and the Federal Communications Commission's authority over broadband service.
The Net Neutrality and Broadband Justice Act will undo the Trump FCC's damaging deregulation, which left broadband access unregulated and consumers unprotected.
Veterans Affairs Department officials testified on sexual harassment issues at the agency and what they're doing to combat them before a House committee. The department's Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Office of Resolution Management, Diversity and Inclusion, Harvey Johnson, said the agency relies on an outpatient survey to gauge experiences.
The survey inquires generally about veterans' feelings of safety while attending appointments.
The Biden administration warned U.S. businesses and health insurance providers that limiting coverage of birth control, now that Roe v. Wade has been overturned, would violate federal law. Meanwhile, pro-choice Democratic lawmakers continue to voice disapproval on legislation restricting women's access to abortion and reproductive health services. California Democratic Representative Barbara Lee.
We cannot accept a world in which people are criminalized for making their own health care decisions. We are not going back.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
The governor of Alaska has signed a historic recognition law, extending recognition to over 220 tribes. With that story and more, it's Art Hughes with National Native News.
With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonio Gonzalez. Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy signed legislation extending state recognition to Alaska's 229 tribes. All of the Alaska Native tribes are federally recognized. The approval comes as supporters were pushing a public referendum this fall to accomplish the same thing. The governor's signature means the referendum vote is unnecessary. The new law is mostly symbolic, as there are no new legal provisions, but supporters say it paves the way for better consultation between the tribes and the state. Two influential U.S. senators are calling for an investigation into whether freedmen should receive federal benefits offered to Native Americans under the nation's treaty obligations. The hearing before the Senate Indian Affairs Committee is the first ever in that chamber to address the status of the descendants of black people enslaved by Native nations. Hawaii Democrat Brian Schatz chairs the committee. He acknowledged the difficult and emotionally charged nature of the discussion, but he says disagreements are not resolved in silence.
So it is our goal today to start a respectful dialogue, to listen to different perspectives, both in a formal setting and informally among members of Congress, tribal leaders, and freedmen advocates, and to educate the committee and the public with informed accounts relating to our nation's two greatest failures: the removal of Native peoples from their traditional homelands, and the enslavement of black people.
Alaska Republican Lisa Murkowski agreed with Schott's call for a review of federal policy. The Cherokee Nation is the only one of the five tribes of Oklahoma to fully recognize freedmen as citizens. Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. told the committee the efforts by the Cherokee Nation to make amends with freedmen has made him a better chief. The Oglala Sioux Tribe is suing the federal government over inadequate law enforcement on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. The Sioux Falls Argus Leader reports the lawsuit lists a total of 33 tribal law enforcement officials to patrol more than 3 million acres of land. The tribe says those officers handle around 134,000 emergency calls in a year's time. That translates to as much as 80 hours of overtime for the 6 to 8 officers working at any one time. The lawsuit says the reservation would need at least 140 officers to comply with Bureau of Indian Affairs standards. The Argus Leader reports the lack of adequate law enforcement means citizens don't feel safe and businesses are forced to pay for private protection for their property and employees. Representatives from the tribe traveled to Washington, D.C. to discuss the problem, but the lawsuit says they were met with indifference. The South Dakota State Legislature also recognized the problem during this year's session with a resolution requesting the federal government fulfill treaty obligations by fully funding the tribe's police department. The first inaugural James Welch Native Lit Festival is underway in northwest Montana. The festival aims to create a space for indigenous writers to share their work. Aaron Bolton has more.
The 3-day festival in Missoula is named after Montana author and poet James Welch, who was born on the Blackfeet Reservation in 1940 and died in the early 2000s. Welch wrote several novels and one book of poems. His 1986 novel, Fool's Crow, about the arrival of white settlers in the Blackfeet Nation, won the Los Angeles Times Book Prize for Fiction. The festival, named in Welch's honor, will feature talks by 19 indigenous authors from around the country, including multiple New York Times bestselling authors and Pulitzer Prize winners. The festival runs through Saturday. All of the talks will be streamed online. For National Native News, I'm Aaron Bolton.
And I'm Art Hughes.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, July 29th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Grant Button and Eric Leuschner. The co-producers are Althea Billings and Josh Salem, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Art Hughes, Eric Tegetoff, Edwin J. Vieira, and Nadia Romlagan. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at